Welcome to Bits About Books, the home for conversations with authors of breakthrough books on sales, marketing, and business. I am your host, Shubhanjan Sarkar, founder of PitchLink, the next generation buyer-seller engagement platform, where our mission is to make buying easy. Welcome to Bits About Books. Our guest today is Dan Pfister, and we speak with him about his book, Million Dollar Winback, How to Win More Sales in Less Time and at a Lower Cost with the Winback Marketing Framework.
You know, people want certainty and they want to save time. They already know you. They already made a choice to buy from you. So it's really not that difficult to roll out the carpet and make it easy for them to buy for you again when their buying window opens.
Dan Pfister was a co-founder at the Business Source Corp, where he helped generate over 50,000 customers. While at the Business Source, Dan created a customer winback process, and based on its success, he founded Winback Labs. He's also the host of the Winback Marketing Podcast and author of Million Dollar Winback. Now, to win back your customers, on to this episode with Dan Pfister. Dan, welcome to Bits About Books. I am excited to talk to you because this is such a unique perspective that we are going to talk about today. I would say 99% of all books talk about how to sell more.
Yeah.
99% of what we read on LinkedIn is about how to sell more, and which essentially is about finding new customers. But we all know that the gold mine that exists with existing customers or churned customers is something we know costs less, easier to get back, has great value, but we don't do it.
Yeah.
So I'm all ears to hear about the book. Do tell me about a bit about your work right now before we dive into the conversation about the book.
Sure. So I'm 100% invested in customer win back. I had, you know, in marketing and in sales, there's just so few things that are just like, wow, you know, like that kind of knock your socks off. And back in 2016, I had that kind of like epiphany moment. And what had happened is myself and a couple of our partners, we had built this company and we got kicked around a bit, right? We got hit in the dot-com bust. We got hit in the 2008 financial crisis. And in 2016, we had built up to, we'd grown 50,000 customers in our business. It was a subscription business. And our attrition got hit really, really. We were just losing customers like crazy. And we couldn't blame it on the economy like we could in 2001 or 2008. And so one of my partners, it was like, she said, you know, Dan, this is your end. You got to fix this. And I said, well, there's nothing we can do. Let's just keep sell more and more and more. And she said, God, we've put so much into these customers. You've got to try. And I said, well, we already send out an email to everybody, you know, when they leave, and that doesn't do very little. And so anyway, Lisa really held my feet to the fire, and Steve, my other partner, he concurred with her. And so what I did is I just took everything I knew about marketing, 20 years of marketing, and I threw it into the hopper and I created a program. And obviously I didn't think it was a very good prospect pool. So I wasn't very excited about it, but still my back was against the wall. So I did it. And right out of the gate, 57X ROI, within 2 weeks, it was like the fastest, easiest, lowest cost money I'd made ever in my marketing career. And I was just like thrilled. I thought, how could I have missed this for so many years, you know? Because I go to the conferences, I listen to the best people, I read all the top books. And so anyway, I got very, very excited about it. And so I took my process, and for the next couple of years, I fixed it. I optimized. And it became kind of like a real passion of mine, because I had never discovered anything like this. You know, when you nail your ICP, you start to get very excited. When you've got a control or a message that gets like triple the conversion rate, you know, I mean, these things are all very exciting. And this is what Winback was like for me. So I wanted to, after I did everything I could to optimize my own stuff, I wanted to learn more. And so I did a study and I interviewed and over 170 people participated in the study. So we got a bunch of win back metrics, and I can share those later if you're interested.
Sure.
And then after that was over, I was kind of bummed out. And I wanted to keep talking to more smart people, more interesting people with their win back. So I started a win back podcast. We are just wrapping up our third season of that. So I'm super invested in this.
Yeah.
And yeah.
So obviously that was the trigger, right? So yep. This incident was a trigger and the success that you got afterwards. What sort of made you bring it into, I mean, having these conversations, right? So yep. There is one thing that you do for research. The other thing is that this continued conversation that you have been doing on this, right? That makes a difference because you're constantly sort of getting inputs and feedback of how practitioners of sales are actually doing it today and how they're investing in win back. So what made you think that, okay, I need to do these conversations as a ongoing process?
Well, when I did win back and I told my friends about it or some of my peers, like most of them thought it was a very exciting idea, but they didn't do anything with it. And so when I did the study, I thought, okay, this isn't just my experience. I told you with the ROI and the low cost. So I did this study and I found that, you know, the average SMB does, their average win back campaign does $485,000. I found the average cost for that campaign was under $5,000. I found that on average, 26% of people come back. Okay. So we got all these metrics. And so now it's not just me talking about my experience. Now these are metrics that are pretty significant. And then I found that there was a study done in the Harvard Business Review that showed that 31% came back and that lifetime value doubled, just like my study showed. So now it's like, it's not just my study, it's a big one from Harvard Business Review. So I thought, okay, I've got all the data now. This will make people, will compel people to do win back. And it still didn't. So I thought, okay, stories. People like stories. People, we need to make it relatable. And that's why I did the Win Back podcast. And still, it's not really moving the needle. It's only people who've actually done Win Back that are all excited about it. Because everybody, not everybody, but you know, you mentioned books, right? Over 60,000 business books are on Amazon. You know how many books are on Win Back? You know?
I'm going to guess one, which is yours.
One. Well, yeah, there's one before mine, and it was written 20 years ago. And I mean, there's a lot of books that have like a chapter on win back or a little piece on win back, or they might even have win back in the title. A couple of them do, but they're not about win back. And so win back is really, I mean, people care about generating new customers. That's their 99%, like you said, that's what they care about. Very few books after that are written on retention and almost nothing on win back. So I think that I've got this big, steep learning curve. I've got to bring people up. So we can talk about this. And that's why I wrote the book, right? Because if the study doesn't do it, if a podcast doesn't do it, what if I just put everything together into one place where if I can convince somebody that it's worth investing 2 hours of their time to get a perspective on this, this is something that they'll do. So that's why I wrote the book.
Right. So this framework you had developed right out of the gate, sort of after the conversation with your colleagues, right? That's when you started sort of writing it, codifying it. And as you said, you refined it over the next few years. Did you sort of arrive at the 7-step framework straight away, or how did it really go about?
It really evolved a lot. You know, it started with a 3-step framework.
Okay.
It was like, basically you want to, identify, the best people, to try to win back, the ones who've got the highest probability of coming back and will generate the most revenue. And then the second part is understanding them. Why they left, what it'll take to win them back. And the third part is actually creating the win back program. And so what I found is that after doing the study and talking to all these people about how they did win back, what I found was that it was a little more nuanced than that. Like if you wanted to pick out all these common pillars. And so I had to add in a little bit more. And the other reason I added in more is that the three steps sound so simple that it's like people, it's dismissible. You know what I mean? Yeah. And the reason I presented it as three steps is because there's a guy who did a book called Story Brand. And he basically said, people want easy. You don't want to eat up too much of their glucose when they're trying to process stuff, right? Yeah. So I wanted to make it very simple. And it just didn't reflect it. So I made it into something much more representative.
Right. I understand. When you are doing the podcasts, so the podcast came before the book, right? So podcasts also part of your research to figure out what people were doing. And I presume that a lot of inputs about the book and situations and what people were doing with the win back idea came out of your podcast interactions.
100%.
So did you talk only to the sales folks, or did you also talk to the customers who are getting won back? Because the customers also would find a lot of value in being won back, because it is not easy to work with a new vendor. It means a lot of decision making, lots of discovery for the buyer. And I'm wondering whether you had the opportunity to talk to a few buyers about what make them come back to a vendor they had left.
You know, I did that myself. I did not ask that in the podcast. Right. The podcast was all about getting stories and reasons why they did win back and common mistakes. But when I talk to people, what I really got a big sense of is, I want to do business with you because I know you. I don't want to go to a stranger. I don't want to go and learn their process and everything else and learn how to use their stuff. I've already gone through that with you. I've already been onboarded. I know what I like. I know how to use it. Just fix these two or three things and I'll come back to you, you know? And that's what I heard, because it's so much easier for them, because people want certainty. They want to know what they're getting. And if they've already done business with you and they've had to go to a competitor, they left you, they've gone to a competitor. And oftentimes they'll find that they weren't better off with the competitor and they feel bad for leaving you. So they don't reach out. So you've got to reach out and make them feel welcome again.
Yeah.
But the whole thing is that, you know, people want certainty and they want to save time. They already know you. They already made a choice to buy from you. So it's really not that difficult to roll out the carpet and make it easy for them to buy for you again when their buying window opens.
Right. Why did you think that you'd write a story to communicate and not how typical sales books are written, as a sort of a manual or how to do it yourself, whatever you call it, right?
Yeah. Well, I'm a big believer in story, and you know, stories, they engage us. Like, I've got these fantastic statistics for customer win back. You know, lifetime value doubles. I mean, we try to move it just a couple of points, and here lifetime value doubles with win back right out of the gate. Not right out of the gate, but I mean, you know, I've went back thousands of lost customers. On average, the second time around, they buy 110% of what they bought the first time around. Hmm. And that study in the Harvard Business Review, they found the same thing. So the numbers weren't enough to get people excited. And so I thought, if I just present the facts, I think the book would have been fairly dry. Because I tried writing it in facts, and it really, it lacked that emotion, because, like, you got to understand, I've got a real passion for this, right? And I wanted to show that passion. And so writing it as a story, stories are engaging, they're interesting. You can start to identify yourself with the hero. So the hero in the book, you know, they had high attrition, high customer acquisition costs, you know, all these regular problems that everybody else has right now, right? Losing market share, higher cost of money. So that's the hero, a very competent person who's built this $20 million business, and now she's running into trouble. And so the people who I want to read this book, that's who they are. They're revenue leaders. They're successful revenue leaders, and they've hit a rough patch. And when I tell this story about how Victoria goes through Winback one step at a time, how she discovers it, how she implements it, all of these things, you put yourself into a story. So now a person's putting themselves into the position of a person who's doing Winback without doing Winback, right? Mm. And so I thought that was very compelling. And I had always liked business allegories. For me, they were an easy read, and I remembered them. Like, I can still remember the 1 minute manager. You know, I can still remember Built to Sell. You know, I can still remember these books. Yeah. But and how many sales books do I remember things from? Maybe 8 or 10, you know, and there's so many tremendous sales books out there. So a story, I just thought it'd be more engaging, it'd be more fun. You know, I understand that, like, people don't read more than the first 5% of a business book. Like, that's the maximum most people get to. And so I made it really short. It was this big, long book, and I just pared it down and just as much to the essence as possible to get people interested enough that they could think, boy, you know, this is worth a test. This is worth some of my time to see if these numbers for Winback are reflected in my business.
Right. And how difficult was it to actually construct the storyline to ensure that all the points that you want to mention are sort of integrated into something which is not forced, but comes naturally? It's not easy. I mean, I know that.
No, it's not easy. It's not. I thought it would be easy because I tell people about, you know, my different win backs. People have told me what their win backs, and I thought, you know, I start writing it, I'll start, the puzzles pieces will all start to fit together. And no, it they didn't. It was a mess. So what I did is I started studying story, the construction of story. And there's all kinds of different people who've got different structures for story, you know, the hero's journey and variations on that. But when you write a book, it's not like that all just fits into your narrative, right? So you've got to do all kinds of change. I think I probably did 3 rewrites of that part of the book, because it's very difficult to tell a story. And I think that I wanted to have something at the level of a Built to Sell, you know, where it's like, boy, you know, people can really relate. You know, there's parts, you know, I just wanted to make it very relatable. And then so there's all these pieces where I wanted to explain in detail how something happened. And I'd have people read it and they'd say, Dan, you're putting me to sleep here. You know, take these 3 pages and cut it down to 2 paragraphs. And there was a lot of that, you know. So I had to make the goal of the book something where people could get real value. They could walk away and they could create their own test campaign. And if I did that without telling them all the whys in every place, I think I would still feel like the book was a success.
Sure. And what was your writing regime like? Were you writing once a week, weekends, early mornings? When did you do it?
Well, it started off in my spare time, and then a year went by, you know, and then I started writing every morning. Okay. And then life would take over, new clients would come in, this kind of thing, and then it would get put off. And then I made it 5 hours a day, come hell or high water, I write. And that's the only way the book got done. Because these books, they're so much more difficult.
See, a lot of people I have spoken to actually started the book by writing blogs, right? They started writing blogs and those were sort of became the chapters, and then they put it together. And of course, they rewrote it and all that. But the substance was already captured somewhere in some form.
Yeah.
I'm imagining that that was not the case for you, because you had the material in terms of the methodology and what you have heard, and the stories were there in your podcasts, but you didn't have them in a written form somewhere. That's what I'm imagining. Is that correct?
You're correct. Exactly.
Okay.
They were not.
So when you actually started doing it, you have two broad sections, and the first section has many chapters. How did you actually go about structuring this book? Was it sort of as the narrative of the story moved forward, it starts sort of like chaptering the stories? Or was it that, no, I have to tell these steps as the story progresses. So I'll first write the steps out, and then I'll sort of name the chapters to go with it. Am I clear?
Yeah. So that's what I did at the beginning. I thought, okay, so here's these seven steps, and we're going to walk the hero through each of them. And then the hero's going to have, oh, these are the common problems. So the hero's going to come back, say, these are the problems. So the reader thinks, oh, okay. You know, these are the problems I'm going to have. We go to the next step. These are the problems they have. These are the likely outcomes. And I thought, we're missing half the book. Like, we're assuming that this person already believes in win back. We're assuming this person already sees value in it. So what I had to do is I created a whole preamble, which was actually about a third of the book. So the book, we have a whole section where our hero discovers win back, where there's this person talking about win back, and they're saying, this happened. And she's saying, oh, wow. If I could get back that many pieces of my customers, that would be great. And then he explains how you can reduce customer attrition because of what you learn from your win back process. And she thinks, oh my God, this is, we've been fighting our churn, and we can only get it down so far. And so that's fantastic. And then we show how he talks about growing market share very inexpensively. And she says, oh my God, these are the problems I've got. So very slowly, she sees that testing out Winback is a no-brainer. And then so she reaches out to the guide, right? And she says, listen, I want to know if when I heard you speak, I believe that Winback is great, but I don't know if it's great for me. Can we speak for an hour, and can we walk through my business, and can you tell me what the potential of Winback is? So I had to put all of that stuff in before to show her the value, right? This is what we can reasonably expect for reduction in attrition. This is what we can reasonably expect the cost to be for a test. This is what we can reasonably expect to get. And then we'll do the test, and you'll see what the numbers are for your business if you want to then roll it out. So I had to do all that preamble before we did the seven steps. And then before that, I thought, well, hold on a second. She's in crisis. So we've got to start the book off with, you know, like any good allegory, it's like there's this big point of drama, this big point of tension. So we had to create that big point of tension around revenue issues at the very beginning. And then you also have to make it respectful, right, to the person, because they are very smart people, you know, but everybody has problems with business. Everybody has blind spots. So I had to do that. So it was kind of like I started with what I thought I needed. And then there's like all these precursors that were needed. And then I needed to figure out how to make an ending that wasn't just totally predictable, right? Because the ending is, like, of course, you know, this person's going to do well with win back and everything else, you know? So how do you make an ending that is gratifying? So, yeah.
Right. It's time for a short break. Stay with us. After the break.
So, for example, you might find that a lot of customers left for one particular competitor. So you ask them, why did they go to that competitor? Well, they offer this particular piece of value that you're not offering. And our markets change and at such a high speed that this gives you insight into new value you need to offer. So you create that value in this step also.
You are listening to a Business Podcast Network original. Podcasting is the fastest growing content marketing opportunity, which is untapped. We can help you craft your audio strategy and help leverage the wide reach and easy streaming capability that the smartphone penetration provides. It is easy, it is powerful and personal. Talk to us to find out how podcasting can help you build your brand and reach out to your targets like never before. Write to us at bpn@bizcast.in. That is bpn@bizcast.in. Business Podcast Network. Podcasts end to end.
Welcome back. I'm Shubhanjan Sarkar, your host for Bits About Books and founder of PitchLink, the buyer-seller engagement platform. Let's dive right back into the episode where we left it. Let's move on to the framework. I think this is a good time to actually dive into the framework. I would not want to delve on the story because that will be giving away the build-up. But I think this is a good time to talk about the seven-step framework. And then I have some questions which I would like to ask.
I'm just going to say exactly how it says it in the book.
Sure.
And step one, we call identifying your best win-back prospects. And the thing is that you've got all these lost customers, right? Mm-hmm. You've got people who were very valuable. You've got people who weren't so valuable. You've got people who stayed with you a long time. You've got people who are a lot of problems. So what you want to do, first of all, is you want to identify who your best prospects are. And we've got a whole process for that, and we go through that in the book. But just for your listeners, just so they can get something out of this right now, is you remember I said that lifetime value doubles when you win a customer back? Well, if you first look at the customers who had the highest lifetime value, there's a good indicator of, who you'd want to win back, right? We also know that people who left more recently are more likely to come back. So if you do just simply recency and lifetime value, you're going to be on your way to starting to create a good list. Right. And then when you remove the people who – am I going into too much detail?
No, it's fine.
Okay. And then if you want to – and then there's people that you just don't want back. They were a pain. They weren't profitable. It was difficult to keep them happy because they really weren't in your ICP. So, you take those groups out. So that's step one. You want to identify your best win-back prospects. And then we got a formula where we quantify the value of each of them. So you've got it's very easy to rank them and you know who to go after first. So the second step, it's understanding them. So now you know who you want to go after. So now you want to find out, why did they leave? What will it take to win them back? And so we've got a three-step process. And basically we talk to, there's internal research first, right? We talk to the salespeople who dealt with those customers. We talk to the customer success people. We take a look at the customer service records. And we kind of get a grounding of what our internal people think. And then what we do is we go out and we talk to a small number of our actual customers, ask them, why did they leave? What it'll take to win them back? Where did things go sideways? All that kind of thing. And so what happens is after you talk to 20 or 30 people, you start hearing the same thing over and over again. And what you typically find is there's two or three reasons why people leave and one or two things it'll take to win them back. And so you do that initial research. And so now you've got, say, the three big rocks about why people leave. So now that you know qualitatively what the issues are, now you want to quantify them. You want to find out which one is the biggest deal, right? So then what we do is we survey everybody. We say, out of these three things, out of these three big rocks, which is most important? So that I'm just giving you a quick and dirty way of doing it. So now you know thing X is what is the primary reason why they left. and thing Y is the primary thing it'll take to win them back. So we get that understanding in step two. In step three, what we do is we set ourselves up for win-back success. And basically what that means is we may have found that people left because of like X, right? And so we might, that might be a piece of value you're missing. It might be your customer success people aren't doing what they were looking for. So you fix whatever that hole is. Mm-hmm. And so that's basically setting yourself up for success and creating any new value. So for example, you might find that a lot of customers left for one particular competitor. So you ask them, why did they go to that competitor? Well, they offer this particular piece of value that you're not offering. And our markets change and at such a high speed that this gives you insight into new value you need to offer. So you create that value in this step also, if you need to.
Right.
And then step four is creating your actual win-back revenue engine. And so you know why people left and you fixed or mitigated the core problems, and you know what it'll take to win them back. So you've created that value. And so you use that to create your messaging and your win back offer, right? You know, the number one reason why they left, number one reason what it'll take to win them back. So now you've got everything you need to create the messaging for your win back engine. Step five is getting launch ready, right? You want to make sure that you've got great re-onboarding processes ready. You got to make sure that customer success, customer service, that everybody is totally on board with their piece of with their piece, because there's no point in winning people back if you drop the ball on the re-onboarding or anything like that. So the next step is actually launching the campaign. And so you launch a test campaign and you see what worked, what didn't work. And you do that with like a win-loss analysis. So you talk to all the people that came back, you ask them why they came back. You talk to all the people who didn't come back and you get a good idea of why they didn't come back. And the reason you do this win-loss analysis is that people told you things in the survey about what it would take for them to come back, but some of them didn't come back. So what held them back? So you want to, massage your offer a little bit more to attract more people, right? So chances are that test will have worked out really well. So now what you do is you launch, you roll it out, right? So now you've rolled it out, and the last step is basically taking everything you learned about Winback and applying it to the rest of your business. So you've created significant revenue out of the Winback campaign, but there's all these downstream benefits, right? So you learned that people are leaving because of reason X. And you learned that giving them value Y helps win back more people. Well, what you do then is you use what you learn to increase customer retention. So you fix maybe this customer service issue over here that is making people leave, and you add this value that people have actually responded to in your win back campaign to come back with, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? Okay.
Absolutely.
So you take that you offered to your past customers and you now offer to your current customers. So any current customers who are going to be leaving for those reasons that you fixed, they're not going to be leaving anymore. And the people who are going to be leaving for a competitor or for this other piece of value that the market is now looking for, you've covered that off also. So that's one of the downstream benefits. I can give you one or two more, or we can drive on. It's up to you.
I have two observations and one question. So the question first, is there a size of business this works for? Because your story talks about a company which is already at 20 million.
Yep.
It's a medium-sized company. So I would presume that they're a 100, 200-man organization, and they're doing 20 million in revenue already, and it, this process makes sense to them. So is it something which only works for slightly larger organizations, or is this something which can be used across the board? It doesn't matter what size you are.
Yeah, it doesn't matter what size you are. The main thing is, if you should be in business for at least a couple of years, because you need to have enough past customers that it is worthwhile doing this, right?
Right.
So it's more about size. Like, I mean, there's a consultancy, a one-person consultancy. They did, you know, what I think it's 67,000 in their first win-back campaign, you know, and they generated that business over the next year. But the point is they won those people back in that, you know, it goes all the range up. Yeah, I mean, you go from that, say 67,000 to, you know, the 485. Larger companies make millions. I mean, there's one lady, she made $68 million for a financial services company by winning back their lost reps. Her name is Nancy Harhut. It's for everybody. The whole thing is, do you have past customers that you've lost? That's the main thing, in significant numbers.
The second part, it's a bit of observation, and I want your feedback on that. So there is a lot that is wrong with the way current B2B sales function operates. We'll not go into a lot of details into that, but basically, it is a dysfunctional process between marketing, sales, and customer success. They don't talk or calibrate or synchronize or orchestrate with each other.
Mm-hmm.
And what I hear from your 7-step format or the framework is that this is all about orchestration of all these different parts.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So it is sort of like what sales should be, but now you're doing it with identified existing customers. Does that sort of resonate with you at all?
100%, exactly. Because when we first start the whole win back process, we get marketing involved, we get sales involved, we get customer success involved. We want all of their opinions, right? Because we've got to go, before we go to our customers, there's you want to show them that you understand them. Right. So I don't want to phone up a customer and they had this problem where they loved us because of this, or they had this great story about us. We've got to go in, and when we speak to them, we've got to speak to them like we know them. And that shows that we care, and that show empathy. And we can actually talk about the psychology of win-back if you want also. But yes, get everybody on board, and everybody, you need somebody to drive the whole process, but when you get everybody on board and you've got this central kernel of truth, we're determining, right? This is how we think, this is why we think customers are leaving. These are the top three or four reasons. And these are top three or four things we think will bring them back. And these are, we're in agreement that these are five or six of our key customers that we've lost, and we want to win them back. And we're all committed to putting in time and effort to getting them back. So there's all of these things where we do, people are naturally aligned with this process.
Right. I think that makes so much sense. The other point that I had was, we all know, and we touched upon this very briefly right at the beginning, we all know that getting a new customer is 6 to 8 times more expensive than retaining or servicing an existing customer, because there are so many things which are out of the way when you already have won a deal. Mm-hmm. Or a customer. Despite this being common knowledge, why do you think people still don't do it?
Wow. You know, there's a lot of reasons. I mean, some people, they're afraid of what they're going to hear. They're going to think, oh my God, you know, I screwed up, they left, and they blame for it. You know, they blame themselves for it. And you know, that's something I hear a lot. Like, why would I want to go out to people who don't want me? You know, and it's just like, oh, and you know, when you start talking to customers, when you start asking them, you know, why you left, how can we make things better? We'd like to do better. We'd like to see where things went sideways and how we can fix them. When you talk to them, you find that their needs have changed. Leadership brought in a new vendor. A bunch of people wanted to keep you, but leadership wanted somebody else. Mm. There's all kinds of reasons why people leave, you know, and people are also very forgiving. And as I said at the beginning, people want to come back to you because the chances are they chose you in the first place because you were very good, right? But there's a couple of things where things went sideways. So fix those things. And if they're not happy with their current vendor, they're probably going to come back to you. And that's why like 1 in 4 will come back.
Yeah. Yeah. This is something I could never sort of reconcile with sales leaders. And I have had a bunch of discussions, you know, I did a series of interviews some time back about what's wrong with B2B, the 5% problem in B2B sales, right?
Okay, yeah.
It looks like as an industry, we are happy with the 5% success rate, which is like unbelievable. It's like, imagine that for any other industry. Imagine that 5% of planes which took off landed.
That's a good one.
5% of the mails you send out reached.
Yeah.
Right? But as an industry, we have accepted that 5% success is great. In fact, if you're looking at numbers, it's more like 1.8 to 2 to 3%, depending upon which industry and which geography you're in. And we accept that. And what you just said is very telling. If I lose a customer, even if he never comes back, it is so important to know why he left. Mm-hmm. Because if there is, like you said, there can be many reasons, like leadership changed, they have friends, they have started a new division, which is already doing their job, whatever. If it is something that I can fix as the owner of the business from which has lost that customer, there can be 10 things I can't fix, which is fine. But if there is one or two or three that I can, that means I'm going to save other customers from facing the same thing and leaving.
Mm-hmm. 100%.
And we don't want to learn that is a strange situation, isn't it?
Yeah. We would rather have 5 more people mad at us than talk to the one person who is possibly mad at us, who might not even be mad at us. Yeah.
Exactly. That's a weird kind of situation. And the statistics talk for themselves. It is not something you are making up or I am making up. It's there that 1 out of 4 can be won back. It's 1 out of 4. But still, as you rightly said, it's a lot of business that can be won back and brought back into the top and bottom line. And the bottom line is much better for those because your overhead is much less in bringing them back.
100%. Yeah.
So yeah. This is a conundrum, I think, which...
Yeah. And you know, it's not just winning them back, it's your brand reputation. All these people, like if you're afraid, let's just say that you are afraid that people are unhappy with you. Well, think of it. In B2B, like how do you choose, right? How do you choose who to do business with? Well, they're peer-to-peer recommendations.
Absolutely.
You know, G2, do you want people out in the wild unhappy with you? I mean, that's nuts. You want to go back and you want to fix whatever's fixable because all the downstream effects, they're going to hit you. Like Mark Stouse says, is they're going to bite you in the butt somewhere down the road. So take care of them now.
Yeah.
And the beauty is when you do take care of them, it's not just, I'll just do this real fast. There's something called the peak end rule. And what it says is that people remember an experience based on the peak of the experience and the end. Well, you can't do anything about the peak, but you can sure do something about the end. So right now, if you assume they're unhappy with you, the last experience of you was so bad that they decided to leave. And that is how they're going to think about you from now on. But if you reach out with a win back and you say, listen, we'd like to understand where things went wrong. We'd like to hear if there's something we can do to fix it, or we just want to do better. The peak end rule comes in. Now you're showing empathy. You're valuing them as a person. You're giving them a voice. So now the end experience isn't negative. It's neutral, at least neutral to positive. So now they're thinking better of you. Yeah. Then what you do is when you offer to help, when you offer to fix something, you actually do fix it. Something kicks in called the pratfall effect. And what the pratfall effect says that if you fix a problem, people see you as more competent because you see you screwed up. So they didn't see you as more competent, but now you fixed it. So they think of you as more competent, not only more competent, but more likable, which is something. So now you combine this peak end rule by reaching out to them and fixing a problem. You can turn people who were unhappy with you literally into people who are happy and they'll win back. And some of them will even become advocates. And I've got stories about that too, you know, so you're helping your brand reputation. And so you've got all these people out there saying, if you're worried about the bad, you're worried about them saying all these bad things. Well, here's a way of turning so many of them around.
Absolutely.
Bits About Books is brought to you by PitchLink, the buyer-seller engagement platform. PitchLink makes buying easy by enabling high-quality engagement between buyers and sellers through its presentation and discussion modules. Sellers create customized sales narratives using sales collaterals and personal videos, and reach out to prospects through a non-intrusive, buyer-qualified engagement. PitchLink requires no installation or download and holds the entire repository of sales collaterals and buyer-seller conversations. Talk to us to know more about how you can engage with customers without intrusion. Call us on 99021-631-32.
I think the upside, just this, the upside of just this, of people, I think we underestimate, and it also shows our lack of understanding of how and how much of the decision is happening in the dark web to which no vendor has access to.
Yeah.
Right? In the dark social.
Yeah.
So we underestimate that. We believe that we are running a process, which we are not. The buyer is running the process. And we ignore these very vital factors. Dan, this was such a interesting discussion, and I'm now going to go back and read the book now that we are done with this conversation, and I'm really looking forward to it. And I think this is such an important book, and I'm sure you will continue to do the interviews, and people should continue to follow the podcast that you are doing, which I think can add so much of value to people who actually are going to constructively look at win back as a definite policy. So wonderful. Thank you for making time and talking and sharing with us in such abundance. Thank you.
Well, thanks for having me, Shupanjan. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
We have a fantastic lineup over the next couple of episodes with great conversations on breakthrough books. Subscribe in your favorite podcast app so you do not miss a single episode. Thanks for listening.
Thank you for being with us today on Bits About Books, where we talk to authors about breakthrough books on sales, marketing, and business. We hope this conversation helped inform and motivate as we all navigate a rapidly changing business environment. For us, these are enlightening conversations enriched with knowledge and expertise. We encourage you to go out and buy the book to learn firsthand and implement some of the great ideas we discussed today. We hope to have you with us again in the next exciting episode of Bits About Books. If you liked what you heard, subscribe to the show in your favorite podcast platforms like iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, or wherever else you get your podcast from, and give us a rating while you are at it.
This BizCast original podcast is produced for PitchLink, the next generation buyer-seller engagement platform, where the mission is to make buying easy. hosted by Subhanjan Sarkar and produced by Rajiv Aditya. See you next time and have a wonderful day.